go along. It was just a day trip.
I don't know, Rachel said. It sounds like a date to me.
Kate shook her head. Trust me, it wasn't. I'm not dating right now anyway.
Why? Maura asked.
Maura, it's none of our business, Anne said. But don't let that stop you if you feel like answering, Kate.
Kate laughed. She liked these women. In just minutes, she'd grown more comfortable with them than she was with her own sister, Bunny. Of course, Kate wasn't in the position of constantly being held up for comparison to the Culhane sisters as she was to Bunny. And despite the goofy name her sister chose to go by in lieu of Barbara, Bunny was one fierce competitor. Top of her class, rainmaker in her law firm, and very strategically married. Kate had never measured up especially well. And Mary Culhane's story of Kate's periwinkle stationery-loving mother dancing on a tabletop had been a mind-blower. Her family had been all about proper manners and proper clothing and proper country clubs and schools back in Grosse Pointe. The idea of Barb Appleton table dancing was as improbable as Kate becoming an astronaut. Right now, Kate might as well have been on Mars. No, not Mars. This place was warmer and a whole lot more hospitable, but still just as foreign.
I got divorced about a year ago. After that, I decided until I get the rest of my life in order, dating can wait. Plus, I tend to make some pretty atrocious decisions when it comes to men. I've got a whole lot of stupid to figure out.
Matt's not an atrocious decision, Lizzie said.
Kate gave a little involuntary smile. Lizzie was right. Well, anyway, my life definitely isn't in order.
Matt returned from the kitchen with his beer and a tall glass of cola for Kate, then rounded the table to take the open chair at its head.
That's my motto, Matt Culhane. He's not atrocious.
Lizzie laughed.
So just how much of our conversation did you catch?
Enough.
He took a swallow of his beer.
And to save Kate further embarrassment and you guys a whole lot of extra snooping around, I do have a few business things going on in Traverse City. Remember that Tropicana Motor Inn that Mom and Dad would take us to?
Yes, all the sisters chimed.
I just wrapped up a purchase and renovation deal on it.
Anne raised her eyebrows in amazement.
You bought the hotel with the hokey flamingos painted on it? Now that is an atrocious decision.
Maura scowled.
I like those flamingos.
So do I, Matt said.
The place was sitting vacant, so I picked it up. And I'm just sharing this with you so you'll get off Kate's case about the two of us dating. And no more commentary about my flamingos or my dating choices, or I'll start dredging up your old dates.
Everyone was silent. No one wanted to discuss their dating history. It was Lizzie who changed the subject.
Hey, isn't that annual beer festival thing in Royal Oak coming up in a couple of weeks? You should take Kate along.
Kate's somewhat homesick heart jumped.
Royal Oak, really? I used to live there.
Matt nodded.
I remember you mentioning that.
He turned to Lizzie.
I'm going, but I have my usual road crew coming along.
The groupies?
Lizzie asked.
They're not groupies, Matt said, then gazed at his beer's label.
Kate supposed he was just admiring his dog's smiling likeness.
They follow you from event to event on their own money for the privilege of pouring your beer and hanging your banner. If that doesn't make them groupies, I don't know what does.
There is a sexual connotation, Rachel said. I don't think that applies.
She paused, then added,
My university is teaching a class on the Grateful Dead as part of its cultural anthropology curriculum. Groupies would be an interesting topic, too.
Rachel is working on her master's degree, Anne said to Kate.
Matt looked just a little annoyed. All the same, they're not groupies. The thought of Harley and Junior as groupies could mess up a perfectly normal guy for life.
I could pour your beer and hang your banner, Kate said.
Actually, you can't pour his beer off-site since you work for him, Lizzie said before Matt could speak. It's against state law for microbrewers.
Rachel pointed her finger at Lizzie.
Exactly, which is why Matt has the groupies, or sometimes one of us goes along, but with Maura due any second now, we're not up for a road trip.
Other than Harley and Junior, who are your roadies, if I'm not allowed to call them groupies?
Lizzie asked.
Mayor Mortensen and a couple of others have mentioned they'll be there, though they plan to catch a Pistons game too, so I'm not sure how much actual pouring help there'll be.
I could at least hang your banner, Kate said.
Anne smiled. That definitely sounded suggestive.
Okay, here's another thought, Kate said. I could sell Depot Brewing merchandise.
I don't bring merchandise, Matt said.
You should, Kate told him. If you sold hats and tees downstate, you could really get your name out there.
He nodded.
I'm betting you're right.
Where in Royal Oak is the event? She asked.
In the Farmers Market building downtown.
I used to work a few blocks east of there on Washington Avenue.
One street away from most of the restaurants and bars, right?
Matt asked.
Exactly.
They mixed it up some this year with a private charity party thrown in on Friday night. Great for them, but I lose my whole day on Friday now since I have to be set up earlier.
So an extra set of hands would be good. I could help.
Kate wanted this so much, and not just to see Royal Oak either. Kate wanted to be with Matt.
I'd like that,
Matt said, and their eyes held for a long moment.
But really, guys, they're not dating. Not even a little bit, Lizzie said in a deadpan voice. Can't you tell?
Maura made an odd sound.
Okay, and I'm about to be not pregnant. Not even a little bit.
What do you mean? Lizzie asked.
Maura settled a hand on her belly.
I've been trying to be cool about it, but all of a sudden my contractions are getting pretty aggressive.
Matt stood up.
Contractions as in labor?
Bingo. I thought it was just Braxton Hicks' lead-up stuff, or we would have stayed home. After all, who wants to disrupt a perfectly good Spaghetti Tuesday?
She closed her eyes for a moment and blew out a slow breath.
Guess I was wrong. If this is anything like last time, it's going to be fast. Lizzie, could you go outside and round up Todd?
Sure, Lizzie replied, then headed out through the kitchen doorway.
You can still take the girls for the night as we'd planned, right, Anne? They're upstairs playing in my old room.
Anne pushed back in her chair.
No problem. Let me get Jack and we'll go take care of things at your house.
Lizzie reappeared with a tall, dark, and semi-worried-looking guy Kate knew had to be Maura's husband. He rounded the table and took Maura by the hand.
I told you those contractions were the real deal, babe. Your suitcase is in the trunk, right?
Todd, this is Kate. Kate, this is Todd,
Maura said. Kate had to give Maura major props for having good manners during childbirth. She doubted she'd be able to show the same grace.
Nice to meet you,
Todd said to Kate, but his eyes never left his wife. Kate gazed at the empty doorway after Todd and Maura left the room, smiling at each other, holding hands, and Kate realized she'd wanted that love and connection when she'd fallen for her ex. She might not have gotten it quite right back then, but she recognized a solid relationship when she saw one. When she glanced away, she caught Matt watching her, and the warmth in his eyes had her heart skipping beats. Matt's mom leaned her head out of the kitchen, ending the moment before Kate was quite ready to have it over. Matt, could you and Kate take care of putting away dinner before you come over to the hospital? And then, suddenly, the house was empty of Culhanes, except for Matt. They moved into the kitchen, and Matt began putting plates away.
This is a new twist on Spaghetti Tuesday.
Kate helped him with the plates. There was something intimate about the two of them being alone in the house, she thought. A little exciting, too.
Silverware goes in the drawer second down from the end, Matt said.
They worked in silence for a minute or two. Then he asked,
So, you've seen my crew. What's yours like?
Smaller. Different.
Any sisters?
Matt asked while digging through the contents of a lower cupboard.
One sister and one brother, Bunny and Chip.
Seriously, those are their names?
Well, actually, Barb and Larry, just like my mom and dad. Everyone calls them Bunny and Chip to save confusion.
She pointed to a harvest gold-colored plastic bowl filled with salad greens.
Do you know where the top to this is?
He rummaged through the bottom drawer, then paused to look up at her.
So, among you summer people, when do adults become too old for names like that?
Never. The same holds true in the townie set. Witness Junior Greinwald.
Matt laughed.
Point taken.
He handed her the bowl's lid.
So how'd you luck out and end up without a nickname?
Kate returned the salad to the fridge.
It was a near miss. Since Mom and Dad had already used up their own names, they could have moved on to the family parakeets.
Which was?
Spike.
Matt smiled.
I kind of like it. I think there might be some spike in you. Remember, I saw you take down the fire chief, Matt said. That was definitely a Spike moment.
Kate squelched a groan. What should I do with the garlic bread?
He handed her a box of aluminum foil.
How about if we take the bread and spaghetti to the hospital crew? I know Mora thinks this is going to be fast, but I remember what it was like in that waiting room last time.
He smiled.
All the same, it's totally worth the wait.
Kate hesitated in her wrapping.
What? He asked. Maybe just the spaghetti should go?
No, definitely the garlic bread. But how about if I just help you get things packaged up? I'd feel a little intrusive being there. I mean, Mora and I just met.
Kate loved what she had seen of the Culhanes, but whatever she and Matt had going on between them didn't make her family.
Huh. I guess I wasn't looking at it that way, Matt said. I was thinking more about how I'd like you to be there.
You would? He came closer and tipped up her chin so that their eyes met.
I like being with you. I like having you next to me. Haven't you figured that out yet?
Matt lowered his mouth to hers and brushed a light kiss across her lips. Chapter 12. Kate had become a human battlefield. 10 days of excitement over heading home to Royal Oak warred with 10 nights' worth of nervous insomnia produced by the same trip. She'd been tempted to go with Matt to the hospital, or his bedroom, or wherever their kiss might lead, but in the end, she had him drop her off at her house before he went to find Mora and the rest of his family. The sun hadn't completely risen when Matt pulled up the Nutshells Drive. Kate, however, had been packed and ready for a good couple of hours. Preloaded with caffeine, she was waiting by the front door with her suitcase in hand. Matt exited the truck, took the suitcase, and stuck it in the back seat. Matt opened the passenger door.
Do you want to lock up the house?
I can't lock it. I don't think we've had keys since my parents bought the place. All I can do is deadbolt it from the inside. Let's just go.
I don't want to be an alarmist, but since I just changed the locks at the brewery and hired a night guard, I'm tuned in to security issues. Keene's Harbor is a great place, but we have our share of crazies, too.
All under control. Avanti.
Matt glanced at Kate. She was really ready, almost too ready.
Is everything okay?
Kate fidgeted in her seat.
Everything is perfectly under control.
The front door burst open, and two or three workmen in hazmat jumpsuits ran out the door, waving their arms frantically, screaming gibberish. Matt watched as they ran to the back of Kate's house and jumped into the lake. Matt got out of his car and walked up to Kate's front door. There was a faint buzzing coming from inside her house. He peeked inside the window. The entire living room was completely stripped of drywall down to its studs. An angry swarm of bees filled a section of the exposed wall. Matt walked back to the car and started up the engine.
Kate?
My house is completely filled with bees, isn't it?
Matt nodded.
Maybe not completely filled. Some of the space is taken up with honey. I'm sure it will all be gone by the time we get back. Do you know what all this is costing? Are you sure you don't?
I know exactly what I'm doing. Just drive.
As Matt started down the road, Kate ran a mental tabulation of the damage and its cost. $2,000 to fix the leaky plumbing, $2,000 to fix the bathroom tile, $3,000 for the mold cleanup, and another $5,000 to replace the drywall and damaged floor. She wasn't sure how much bee removal cost, and she owed Matt at least $9,000 on the mortgage. If she didn't get the house fixed by Christmas, her parents were turning it over to Matt. And if she didn't get Matt paid by Thanksgiving, he was going to foreclose. Matt sensed her thoughts and patted her leg with one hand.
Remember, just one foot after the other.
Good advice, she thought. Panic was counterproductive.
Run me through what we need to get done once we're in Royal Oak, Kate said. I've already double-checked the boxes of merchandise and found one of those old-fashioned thingies to run credit card slips through. You don't want to lose the credit sales, and I really think we should have brought the hoodies along with the tees. It's autumn, after all.
Matt said nothing, but handed her a travel mug filled with coffee.
What's next? Kate asked.
You tell me, Matt said. You're my snoop. Anything new on that front?
Not a thing. Taproom work is harder than I thought.
Servers are too busy to be good snoops. I did notice something about your menu, though. Who put it together?
Matt lifted his mug from its holder. I worked with a friend who used to be a regional manager for an upper-end chain.
A woman? He took a swallow of coffee.
Yes. Why?
Did you date her and dump her?
Matt's eyebrows went up a fraction of an inch. No.
You must have ticked her off, at least. You have no fresh vegetables anywhere on your menu aside from your iceberg wedge smothered in blue cheese dressing. Oh, and the mango poppy seed coleslaw, but don't get me started on that.
No one else has complained.
The customers who care the most are women, not your standard breed of beer lovers, and those women would eat fish bait if it gave them a chance at contact with you.
What are you talking about?
Your lunchtime fan club? They know your schedule better than you do. Haven't you noticed the daily lineup?
I see them. They're nice people, but I'm not interested. And it's no big deal. Don't you see the way men look at you?
Kate laughed. No, I'm pretty pragmatic about my looks.
And they are?
I don't know. Kind of cute, I guess. Matt glanced over at her.
You're beautiful. And if you've missed men checking you out, I'll start letting you know when it happens. Like now. The more we're together, the harder it is for me to keep my hands off you.
Desire rushed through Kate's belly, and she admitted to herself that she didn't want Matt to keep his hands off her. She took a beat to steady her voice. Getting back to the vegetables, do you have something against them?
No. In fact, I like vegetables, especially French fries.
She let that sit for a couple of miles and moved on to another topic. You can never go home again. Any idea who said that? Kate asked.
Nope.
Well, I'm thinking it's true. You can't.
Maybe for that unnamed person, Matt said. But I do it every day. In fact, except for a short break long ago, I haven't left.
Exactly. But I did. And now I'm returning. Today.
And?
The magazine I used to work for will be there, she said. The places I used to go will be there. And life will have rolled on without me. I'm going to be like a ghost.
You look real to me.
Kate smiled. But not to them. Matt shook his head.
Kate, you've been in Keene's Harbor, not Brigadoon or whatever. You've made friends, found a job, even brewed up a little trouble, so it seems to me you're doing great.
The guy who took my job? He's got my office. And then there's Shayla the homewrecker.
Who?
Kate gave a dismissive wave of her hand. The woman my ex ran off with. She has my old bed, my ex, and even my dog. They all have lives, and I've been in a holding pattern. I don't have a clue what to do next. He cut his eyes to her.
I'd suggest switching to decaf.
Kate realized she'd been jiggling her left foot at close to the speed of light.
Kate, seriously, it's all going to be fine.
But how can you say that? How do you know?
Experience, for one. And two, you're not the kind of woman to let opportunity pass you by. But that doesn't mean you need to dwell on things. How about you look at your time in Keene's Harbor as a gift? How about you slow down and appreciate the present? The best I can figure, the future takes care of itself.
Nice philosophy, but I've seen how hard you work.
I'm not saying I don't.
I need a plan, she said. He looked her way again.
Eventually you do, but not right now. There are no rules. There aren't any plan police waiting to nab you. Give yourself a break.
Kate said, liking the thought. No plan. She could live with that. And truth was, she didn't miss her old bed, or her old job, or her ex. But there was a hole in her heart for her dog. She desperately missed her dog. Matt stepped back and took a look at the Depot Brewing Company booth. It was, as it should be, perfect. He and the road crew had set it up enough times in the past. It had taken some adjusting and another table to create Kate's merchandise area, but Matt considered it effort well spent. He should have started doing this sooner. He also wished at least a couple of his sisters could be here, but understood why they weren't. The choice between a new nephew to pamper and working a beer festival was a no-brainer. He'd put in his share of time admiring baby Todd, too. Harley stood beside Matt, checking out the booth.
30 minutes before the doors open, he said. You've done good, son.
Matt smiled at his friend, who had as big a heart as he did a skinny body. When Matt had been a kid, he'd always mixed up Harley with the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz.
I couldn't do it without you, any of it.
And Matt meant it. After Matt's dad had booted him from the hardware store for an admittedly bad attitude, Harley had given him a job. He had also given Matt loans and advice when he'd opened the microbrewery. Matt had been mad at his dad at the time, but now he realized his dad had done it to help him spread his wings.
Glad to help.
Harley stuck two fingers in his mouth and whistled for Junior, who was flirting it up with a pair of pretty hot-looking beer pourers a couple of booths down. Junior gave Harley a wave.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm gonna go grab Junior, Harley said. We need to check out that spread of fancy finger foods before we're trapped behind the booth. I think I saw shrimp.
Matt could have pointed out that the food was intended for the party guests and not Harley and Junior, but his friend was among the ranks of old dogs who refused to be retrained. After they'd taken off, Matt headed toward Kate, who was putting her finishing touches on the merchandise table. Just outside of Keene's Harbor, she lapsed into silence. He'd understood, or thought he had. She had a lot on her mind, and she was going to process it in whatever way worked best for her. It was nice to feel comfortable and relaxed with a woman, even in a mostly silent 4-hour car ride. He'd just turned on the music and moved into his zone. He looked down at Kate's table.
How's it going over here?
Almost done.
She was concentrating on adjusting a pile of t-shirts. I'm using the stack 'em high and watch 'em fly approach.
It's your turf. Arrange it however you want. We should be getting our first takers in about half an hour.
He held out his hand.
Come on, let's take a look around before the place opens for business.
Kate surveyed the booths lining one of the two long aisles that had been set up in the cavernous building. I had no idea there were so many microbrewers.
More every day, Matt said. But it's like any other business. Right now it's surfing a high, but it will level out again in a couple of years. Only the best will be commercial concerns, and the others will go back to home brewing if they really have a passion for it, or just move on to the next fad.
The walk was a slow one. He'd been in the business long enough that he knew most of the exhibitors. Between booths, Kate asked, "What are you, some kind of cult hero? I don't think there's a single person here who doesn't know you or want to know you."
"It's not that big a deal. We don't land under the same roof all that often, so when we do, we talk."
Matt stared into the crowd of people in front of him and saw that Chet Orowski was heading his way. Matt already knew through the grapevine that Chet hadn't been able to find any other investors. Orowski stopped a couple feet in front of Matt, and Matt extended his hand in greeting, thinking this was as good a time as any to reestablish a cordial relationship.
"Chet, it's good to see you."
Chet slapped Matt's hand away and poked him in the chest.
"Culhane, you're a crook and a liar."
Matt stood his ground, waiting for Chet to finish.
"Do you really want to do this here?"
Chet's face was flushed, and his hands were fisted.
"You bet I do."
His pupils danced around his eyes like Mexican jumping beans, and his voice got louder.
"If I'm going to go down, it's going to be in a friggin' blaze of glory. I'm going to stand behind my booth and tell everyone who will listen what a bastard you are."
Matt glanced out of the corner of his eye at the booths to his left. Yep, spectators were already lining up.
"And this is why you drove all the way from Traverse City and rented a booth in Royal Oak?"
If the guy was going to slander him, he could have done it in a much more cost-effective fashion, Matt thought. Chet really wasn't much of a businessman.
"Yes, no. I also did it to look for a partner. Someone honest, someone who follows through."
He glared at Kate.
"Someone who doesn't waste all his time chasing after tail."
Kate stuffed her hands onto her hips, narrowed her eyes, and leaned into Chet's personal space.
"Excuse me?"
Matt clamped his hand on Chet's shoulder. To everyone but Chet, it would look like a friendly gesture. Only Chet needed to know that this was a subtle warning of what could follow if he didn't tone it down.
"Now, Chet,"
Matt said,
"we're all friends in this place, right?"
Chet went silent. Matt made his warning marginally less subtle.
"Right?"
Chet squirmed, but Matt's grip on him stayed firm.
Right, Chet gasped.
And when we're among friends, we want everyone to have a good time, don't you think?
Chet nodded enthusiastically, though Matt was pretty sure he'd spotted sweat popping out on the guy's forehead.
Kate here is one of my friends, which would make her one of your friends by extension. You don't want to talk about a friend the way you just did about Kate, right?
Right.
So how about you apologize to Kate, and to me if you feel like it, and then we all get on with what's going to be a very good beer festival. After all, do good things, and they come back to you.
Chet cleared his throat. I'm sorry.
The words had been delivered without a hell of a lot of sincerity, but Matt had no interest in pushing this scene a second longer than he had to. He released Chet's shoulder, then held out his right hand again. This time Chet did as he should have to begin with. He shook Matt's hand.
No hard feelings, Matt said.
At least not on his side. He wasn't going to speculate on Chet's. Kate had been called a lot of things in her life. Stubborn, noisy, and even some less nice stuff by her ex. But never had she been called tail. She glared over her shoulder at Chet as Matt led her away. In a perfect world where she was all-powerful and could smite the bad guys at will, she'd still be back there giving Chet a new perspective on life. Matt took her hand and gave it a friendly squeeze.
Don't let him tick you off. He's not worth it. Or, if it would make you feel better, how about if later I lure him into the parking lot and you can give him a fat lip?
Kate smiled in spite of herself. I just might take you up on that. He laughed.
I guess I should consider my audience when I'm joking around.
I promise I won't hold you to your offer, she said. But she did hold his hand almost all the way back to the depot booth, where she moved on to finish up her merchandise fluffing. And just in time, too. Kate could time down to the second when cocktail hour was starting in Royal Oaks bars by the flood of private tasting guests into Farmer's Market. She saw plenty of familiar faces in the crowd. Back when she'd been at Detroit Monthly, she'd always gone out with co-workers for cocktails. Richard had worked late every Friday, or so he'd claimed. As people streamed by, she exchanged waves and greetings with casual friends. It felt good to see them. And that scared emptiness she'd been anticipating never materialized. She was no ghost. She was a new and improved version of Kate. She looked past the guys checking out the depot baseball caps and locomotive bottle openers and on to Matt, who was giving one awesome beer spiel. He was smart and funny, and his crowd was eating it up. Except one person. The guy was busy playing with his BlackBerry in exactly the same way that had made her insane from the day he'd bought the thing. Richard. Her ex's black hair was absurdly long, but his perpetual slight frown, English tweed jacket, khakis, and ever-so-retro loafers were just the same. Kate felt trapped. Fight-or-flight instinct kicked in, and flight didn't look to be a viable option. Running out of the building wouldn't be very subtle, and she'd have to slip past him unnoticed to pull it off anyway. Maybe Richard would drift off without seeing her. She automatically made change for a guy who decided to buy 10 bottle openers to give his family Christmas gifts. Somehow she didn't think Grandma was going to plots with gratitude, but Kate wasn't about to stop the dude. After he was gone, she ducked under the table to grab more stock. She briefly considered hiding, except the space was a little tight and dark for her taste, and no doubt Matt would come looking for her. She'd rather not explain the whole ex thing to him. Kate rose, and Richard spotted her. She wished she'd gone for full makeup instead of her usual mascara and lip gloss. It never hurt to look fabulous when seeing the ex for the first time since moving out of the marital home. But what she lacked in cosmetics, she could make up for in attitude. If Matt could talk nicely to Chet, she could do it with Richard. Maybe. Kate rounded the merchandise table and extended her hand. Richard.
Kate.
His handshake was on the limp side, but at least he'd given it a shot. I'm surprised to see you here, she said. You're not a beer drinker.
This is a charity function that a client supports. I have to make a showing. But I'll say you can't be nearly as surprised as I am. I'd heard you'd lost your job and had to move in with your parents.
I have a job, she said.
So I see. And Larry and Barb are well?
They're fine, I'm sure. They're at the Naples house until May, and I'm staying at the Nutshell.
Really? The Nutshell? That must be interesting.
To anyone else, his comment would have sounded positive and sincere. Kate, however, knew how much he disliked both the Nutshell and Keene's Harbor, and she felt very protective of both. Kate smiled. It's wonderful.
Really? Living in your parents' cottage and working in a brewery?
He glanced at his phone.
That's a far cry from what you used to do.
Kate wondered if Shayla was texting him, just as she had when Kate had been his wife. Water under the bridge, Kate thought. Shayla could text him all she wanted now. Kate had loved Richard, but his affair had taught her something. She couldn't be the person she was meant to be when she was with someone she couldn't trust. If she ever decided to marry another man, it would definitely be someone like Matt. Someone who made her feel more herself than she did alone. I like it in Keene's Harbor. I always did, she said. I'm happy there.
How nice.
Funny thing, but he didn't look very happy about her being happy. So can I tell you a little about our beer? She asked, knowing this would roust snobby anti-brew Richard.
No thanks, he said. I should move along.
Not quickly enough, she thought as he stepped off. Then he turned back.
Oh, I forgot to mention. We had to give Stella away.
Chapter 13. Kate felt as though some vital connection in her brain had just snapped. Would you mind repeating that? A faint little smile was forming on Richard's usually passive face.
We had to give Stella away.
Stella had been their baby. They'd spoiled her like mad. When they'd separated, leaving her had been wretched for Kate, far more painful than leaving Richard. Stella had been faithful.
What do you mean, had to? Kate asked.
Stella didn't take to Shayla. We couldn't have her biting all the time.
Who, Shayla or Stella?
Very funny. Really, Kate, it's great that you still have your sense of humor to keep you going.
And so you gave her away instead of sending her to me?
I didn't know where you were.
My cell number hasn't changed.
Richard flipped his bangs out of his eyes like a pop star.
Don't be difficult. It's not as though you cared enough to take her in the first place.
Don't even start with that stuff. I was ordered by the court to surrender her to you, and you know it. You had the fenced backyard. I had the loft apartment and no dog park in walking distance. I didn't even get visitation rights thanks to your high-priced evil divorce lawyer. So tell me, who has her now?
Her ex hesitated, and Kate knew this was going to be no bueno. He looked down at his feet, and Kate knew that for all his posturing, he felt bad. Richard had truly loved Stella, but Richard was a weak person. Richard was no match for Shayla.
I'm not sure, he said. Shayla handled it.
Stella was ours before Shayla became part of the picture, and you let her handle it, whatever that means. How could you allow any of this to happen?
He kicked the ground with his right shoe, then looked back up at Kate.
I'm engaged. Shayla wouldn't agree to marry me unless Stella went. She knows how busy I've been at work, so she just took care of it. I'm sure she found Stella a good home.
You should just move on, Kate. Move on? Stella had probably been dumped at the city shelter where her chances would have been slim. Everyone wanted cute puppies, not 7-year-old ginger-colored miniature poodles who had just a bit of a bad attitude. But Kate wanted her with all her heart. She also wanted to shake Richard until his teeth rattled, or boot him one in the rear, or... She wrapped her hand around the closest open beer from the pouring table. She didn't have a firm plan, but if Richard's ridiculous hair ended up looking like stringy black seaweed, that wouldn't be so tragic. Before she could do anything, though, two muscled arms gently wrapped around her from behind.
Steady, Matt said low into her ear, drawing her closer. Take a breath, sweetheart.
Kate's eyes were focused on Richard.
I want Stella now.
Richard's gaze darted from the beer bottle to Kate.
I told you, I don't know where she is.
Matt tightened his hold on Kate.
Why don't you set down the bottle?
He gave away my dog.
I take it you know him,
Matt said. This is my ex, Dick, which he hated being called.
Richard turned to Matt and offered the same limp hand he had to Kate. And you are?
Matt Culhane, Kate's boss.
I should press assault charges against your employee.
Kate rolled her eyes. For what? I didn't even touch you.
Harassment, intimidation, Richard said.
Kate's throat tightened. She was going to cry, but damn it, she wasn't going to do it in front of her idiot, rotten-to-the-core ex. She pushed at Matt's arms. I need to go outside.
Matt slid his arms away, and Kate hustled for the door. She walked blindly down the parking lot's first aisle, looking for some privacy and Matt's truck. It didn't take long to find something that big and red. She tugged at the passenger door handle, but the vehicle was locked.
Hang on,
Matt said from behind her.
Kate turned and flung herself at him.
He gave away my dog to some stranger, Matt. I never should have let him have her.
Matt rubbed her back and gave her a chance to settle down. After a moment, she stepped back and wished for a tissue.
I'm sorry, she wiped her eyes. I feel awful. I should have never trusted him with my dog, but honestly, I didn't have a choice.
Matt unlocked the truck and opened the door for her.
Why don't you take a couple minutes in some quiet? Harley and Junior have it covered inside.
Kate nodded and climbed in.
I'll be back to check on you in a minute. I just have to...
He gestured back at the market building. Kate figured that could mean anything from use the facilities to hide from the weepy woman. Either way, he'd been there when she'd needed him. And in her book, he was already a hero for that. Matt had to sprint the 40 like a high school kid to catch up with Kate's ex, but he did it. Richard was standing next to a black BMW getting ready to leave. Matt walked slowly up to Richard, trying his best at friendly.
That was pretty weird stuff in there.
Richard's mouth turned down.
It's always weird with Kate. Fire her now while you have cause.
Thanks, but I'll handle my own employment decisions.
Then keep her around. But you can't say I didn't warn you. She's a soul eater.
Total bull. But Matt had the feeling this guy dished a lot of that. Matt got down to business.
So, Richard, I couldn't help overhearing you and Kate, and I've got to say, I think you know where her poodle is.
Richard took a half step closer to his car.
Why would I lie?
Good question, since you're pretty bad at it. You were obviously scrambling when you talked to Kate, and now can't meet my eyes. So what's up with the poodle? Susie? Sniffy? Whatever the mutt's name is?
Matt asked, figuring a little goading might work. The color started to rise in Richard's face.
Her name is Stella.
See? You care about the dog. It's obvious. I'm a dog guy, too, and have been for a lot of years. I get the relationship between man and canine. But I'm also a big fan of Kate's. So if there's something I can do to help her get her poodle back, I'm going to do it.
Is that a threat?
It was kind of funny that this professor-looking dude was ready to rumble, but Matt wasn't a rumbler anymore. He didn't have to be.
If you're asking whether I'm going to beat you up over a poodle, the answer is no. If you're asking whether I'm going to put time and effort into getting to the bottom of this, the answer is yes. And when it comes to Kate, I have all the time in the world.
Don't bother. Stella's fine.
Really? And you claimed you don't know where she went. Want to tell me the real story?
Richard hesitated, but finally made a sound of capitulation.
I found her in the city shelter where my fiancé, Shayla, had dropped her. I had some friends adopt her. I visit her all the time.
So he was cheating on his fiancé with a poodle. Matt couldn't say he'd encountered that before, or wanted to again. Mostly, though, he wanted to ask how the guy could want to marry a woman who'd done what this Shayla had. But he already knew Richard's judgment sucked. After all, he'd let Kate go.
Kate would be with the dog full time, Matt said. She loves Stella.
I want Stella by me.
She'd be better off with Kate.
Matt paused.
And I think you know that.
After some sour-faced deliberation, Richard pulled a slim notepad and a gold pen from his breast pocket. He scribbled something on a piece of paper, tore it out, and handed it to Matt.
Give me 5 minutes before calling, Richard said. I'll need to talk to them first.
You're doing the right thing, Matt said.
He pocketed the paper and hoped this was the very last time he'd see Dognapper Dick. 15 minutes later, after a call comprised of some detailed poodle negotiations, Matt stepped back into the party. Kate was at the merchandise table. She gave him a smile, but it wasn't up to her usual wattage. Mayor Mortensen and his wife Missy stood behind the beer table with Harley and Junior. Missy was as thin and cheery as Torvald Mortensen was rotund and generally glum. After saying hello to Torvald, Matt turned to Missy.
Kate and I need to take care of a few things, he said.
I do? Kate asked.
You do.
Kate looked confused. Okay, then.
Do you think you could cover the merchandise table? Matt asked Missy. The party wraps up at 8.
Absolutely, I'd love to help, Missy said. Just let me get with Kate and learn the ropes.
While Kate and Missy talked, Matt made sure the rest of his troops knew what to do. All spare beer in the bins below the table, merchandise boxed and stowed, and everything wiped down and ready to roll when they opened again tomorrow at 11.
Come on, he said to Kate when Missy and she had finished. We're going to sneak out on the boss.
Her smile was a little brighter. That should be a challenge, especially for you.
I'm pretty good at it.
Now if he could just pull off the rest of his plan.
After giving Kate some lame excuse about picking up supplies, Matt headed his truck out of downtown Royal Oak and south on Woodward Avenue. When they merged onto the freeway heading west, Kate started getting suspicious.
What kind of supplies are we getting? They must be pretty exotic if you couldn't have picked them up someplace in Royal Oak.
They're one of a kind, he said.
Gotta be, Kate said before lapsing into silence.
Matt exited the freeway and a few minutes later turned into the subdivision he'd been told to look for. 2 blocks down, first house on the left, he pulled into a driveway and parked. Friends of yours? Kate asked.
Not exactly.
She looked at the unassuming beige brick colonial with its perfectly clipped shrubs.
Okay, this is weird. I feel like I've been here before.
It's possible, he said. These are friends of Richard's.
And you know this how?
Your ex-husband and I had a talk. The usual guy stuff. We shared, we laughed, we bonded.
No, really, Kate said.
And he told me where your poodle is.
Stella? Here?
She opened the truck door. He settled a hand on her arm.
Before you go all Rambo, here's the deal. These people have had your poodle for almost 6 months. They love her and think of her as their own. They've even renamed her Bitsy.
Bitsy? Granted, living here is better than what I'd imagined for her, but Bitsy? They probably have her in a pink ruffled collar and clipped with a little ball at the end of her tail. I need to go get her.
Matt held his palms toward her, trying to slow her down a little.
In a second, but first you have to listen. The only way they're going to let her leave with you is if she does it of her own free will.
He didn't add that if the poodle picked Kate, he'd be buying the couple a replacement dog. That was his bargain and his responsibility.
You mean I have to sweet-talk my own dog back to me when we haven't seen each other for over a year?
He nodded.
That's the deal.
It's insane.
I know, but it was the best I could do.
And that had taken some major persuading. She drew in a deep breath, then slowly let it out.
Okay, I can do this.
They walked to the front porch, and Kate's finger hovered over the doorbell as she asked,
How am I going to handle it if she doesn't choose me?
Matt spoke from the heart.
How could she not?
As Kate stood waiting for the door to open, she finally recalled who would be on the other side. Myrna and Ed Savage. They were a nice couple, about 20 years older than she. Ed was an accountant and one of Richard's clients. Kate had been to a dinner here once, years ago. She'd reciprocated, and that had been the end of any couple's socializing. She thought maybe Richard and Ed still golfed together, though. The door swung open, and Myrna greeted them. She looked no happier to see Kate than Kate felt about this entire mess. But since this wasn't the Savages' fault, Kate took care to be super polite. Myrna ushered them into the living room where Ed stood waiting with a dog's travel crate at his feet. Kate caught a glimpse of Stella's ginger coat, and her heart began to drum. She wouldn't be able to breathe properly until this was done and she had her poodle back.
If you don't mind, I'd like to propose a few guidelines, she said to the couple. How about if you're on one side of the room and I'm on the other? Matt can put Stella,
Myrna stood her ground,
Bitsy.
The poodle, Matt suggested.
Kate pressed her lips together.
Matt can put the poodle in the middle of the room. Whoever she goes to first keeps her. How do I know you're not cheating?
Myrna said, suspiciously sniffing Kate.
You smell like bacon.
Kate emptied her pockets onto the table.
No bacon.
Myrna sniffed again.
I think you still smell like bacon.
Matt picked up a can of Febreze from beside the couch. He generously sprayed both the women and stepped back.
Okay, then. Let's do it,
Kate said, wiping her sweaty palms on her pants leg. Matt retrieved the travel crate from Ed while Myrna moved to her husband's side. Matt placed himself in the middle of the room.
Everybody ready?
Yes.
Matt opened the crate and withdrew Stella, who emerged with an obvious show of stubbornness. She didn't care that she weighed 5 pounds. She was mistress of her own domain. Stella looked healthy, though she probably felt a little embarrassed by the hokey haircut. A palm on the end of her tail and balls on each hip, just as Kate had suspected. Stella looked around, her brown eyes bright with curiosity, and Kate focused on her poodle, willing her to look her way.
Please, baby, please remember me.
Matt set Stella down. Myrna clapped her hands and made some kissy noises.
Bitsykins, come to mommy.
Stella looked Myrna's way once, then took a casual sniff at Matt's shoe before turning away from him, too. Kate smiled. Who wouldn't love a poodle that played hard to get?
Come on, Bitsy. Be a good precious babykins,
Myrna cooed. Kate figured that even in the time Stella and she had been apart, her dog couldn't have had a personality transplant. And that being the case, Kate knew just what to do. She plopped herself down on the beige carpet, her back to the beige wall, and feigned total disinterest. Stella grew a tad miffed at Kate's nonchalance. She took one step, then another toward Kate, just as Kate had hoped. Now was the time for a little girl talk, Stella style.
Hey, Stella, Kate said. You're looking pretty good. How have you been doing? Scare any Dobermans lately?
Stella's ears perked up, and she ran to Kate and settled in her lap. Kate nestled her cheek against Stella's soft fur.
You're the best dog ever. I missed you so much.
And Matt was the best man ever, Kate thought. He'd brought her back together with her Stella. Chapter 14. Stella must have been royalty in a prior life. Kate could find no other reason for the dog to be so unimpressed with the hotel Matt had chosen. Kate, on the other hand, was wowed by the Townley Inn. Her room looked like something out of an English country manor, all dark woods, plush carpets, and rich upholstery. And her bed was a fantasy-worthy, feather-down dream made for lovers. At the moment, though, she shared it with a cranky poodle. Kate sat alongside the dog at the end of the mattress. Matt sat opposite them in a desk chair he'd pulled up to their white linen-covered room service cart. They must have been feeding her from the table, Kate said. Look at the way she's turning up her nose at the food I bought her. It's going to be tough getting her back on regular dog food. Stella was eyeing the final bite of tenderloin on Matt's plate. He speared the meat with his fork, and the poodle huffed out a sigh as her last shot at prime beef disappeared down Matt's throat. Chicken breast with roasted autumn vegetables demolished, Kate set her fork aside.
Have I thanked you for Stella in the last 10 minutes?
Matt's expression was a cross between amusement and resignation.
I just did what any other guy would have.
Not Richard?
No, not Richard.
There were a lot of things about her ex she could have shared with Matt, but none of them really mattered.
Luckily, he's not my problem anymore, she said.
Matt smiled at her. His eyes softened, and the room grew warmer as those big bed fantasies charged to the front of Kate's mind.
I'll clear the cart to the hall, Matt said.
Kate watched him push the cart out the door. This was it, she thought. Here they were in a romantic hotel room, just the two of them, and Stella. Perfect, right? Wrong. Not perfect. For starters, she was wearing a T-shirt that advertised beer. Plus, she suspected her lipstick had gotten gnawed off at Myrna's and her hair was a wreck. He, on the other hand, was hot. His T-shirt molded suggestively to his gorgeous body. His butt looked great in his jeans. His hair was tousled just enough to be sexy, and he had a manly 5 o'clock shadow going. "Okay, don't panic," she told herself. "Get a grip." Should she stand? Should she sit? Should she lounge back onto the bed? Should she get undressed? No, definitely no undressing. She wasn't ready for undressing. Matt returned to the room, closed the door, and Kate jumped up from the bed. "Well?" Kate said. Their eyes met and held for a moment, and Matt glanced over his shoulder at the door. Either he was checking to make sure it was locked, or else he was planning on leaving, Kate thought. Best not to take any chances on him leaving, she decided. It was now or never, so she moved in and kissed him. Definitely not her best work, but then, in her defense, she was a little rusty. He tilted his head and looked at her.
"What was that?"
She stepped back while finding some way to hedge her poor move. "A goodnight kiss between friends?"
"Really?"
"More or less." He looked at her with the same hot intensity he'd shown the night she'd sung in the karaoke contest. But this time, she wasn't scared. At least, not much.
"I thought we were closer friends than that."
"How close of friends?" she asked. Matt didn't answer with words. Instead, he kissed her deeply, intimately. Kate could swear she heard herself moan as his hand moved to the small of her back. She'd been starving for this. For him. There was no point in fighting it. Her willpower was shot. He was too sexy, too near, too perfect. She wanted his body heat and the feel of him taking her to that place she'd missed so much.
"Hang on, sweetheart," he said.
No problem, because she'd already wrapped her arms around his neck. He scooped her up and settled her on the bed. He switched off the bedside lamp, and Kate reached for him. His weight settled over her, pushing her deep into the heavenly, soft comforter. She let her fingers flex into the muscles on the back of his shoulders as he claimed her mouth with his once again. A low growl sounded. Kate was pretty sure it hadn't come from Matt, and she was almost certain it hadn't come from her. She nudged the pillow that Stella had to be occupying and got an angry grunt in response. Matt moved on to kiss Kate's throat. She arched her neck and asked for more while she tried to work his shirt free of his jeans. She wanted to touch skin. Now. Matt knelt above her and pulled off his shirt. Kate wished she had the patience to focus on his body's details, but she was too far gone. She pulled him back down.
"We've got all night," he said.
"Not good enough."
"Trust me, it's gonna be good,"
he said in a low voice that made Kate's body hum in excitement. Kate fumbled with his belt, thinking the damn thing was like some sort of Mensa brain challenge. Stella let loose a series of high-pitched yips. Someone in the next room added a couple of firm raps against the wall. Kate gave up on the belt. Her dog was going to ruin everything. "Stella, no!" The poodle brought it down to a whine.
"Ignore Stella,"
Matt said, his lips skimming along Kate's neck, her ear.
"Focus on me. Would it help if I howled?"
Stella went back to barking. The neighbor slammed on the wall, and the poodle amped it up to the point that Kate's ears rang. Matt lifted his head and gave Stella a glare.
"Stop."
The poodle curled her lip, but obeyed.
"Now, where were we?"
Matt asked as he opened the top four buttons on Kate's chambray depot shirt, his last word ending on a sharp breath of pleasure as he settled his mouth between her breasts. Kate murmured encouragement, and Matt cruised on, making quick work of the rest of Kate's buttons. "Gotta admire a man who's talented with his hands," she managed to say. When Kate's shirt went flying, Stella let loose a snarl that sounded like it came from a Rottweiler. Matt paused in his body exploration.
"That wasn't a good sound."
Kate's poodle stared at them from one pillow over. The dog's eyes glowed in the dim light, and it wasn't an "I'm a happy dog" kind of glow either. "Settle down," she told Stella, but the poodle was focused on Matt.
I'm sensing a turf war,
Matt said. Kate kissed him and popped the top button on his jeans. No way.
Gruff, gruff, gruff. No doubt about it. Your dog doesn't want me touching you,
Matt said. She doesn't get a vote. Give me a second. Kate unwrapped herself from Matt, corralled Stella, and tucked her into her travel crate, which sat beside the brocade love seat. Be good, she said to Stella. Yip, 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 yip! Matt yanked a burgundy-colored throw from the love seat and dropped it over the crate.
A row, 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 a row!
The guy in the next room pounded the wall as though he planned to hammer his way through.
Sorry, Kate called. We're trying to get her to stop.
But Stella kept on in howl mode.
I'm calling the front desk, the guy shouted through the wall.
Kate had a vision of security at the door, with the police and the ASPCA. And just like her last legal run-in, she'd be only half-dressed. Matt rolled to his feet.
This isn't going to work.
I'm sorry, she's really a great dog.
No problem. I understand where she's coming from. I feel exactly the same way about you as she does.
He gave Kate a quick kiss over Stella's warning growl.
Lesson learned. Beware the overly protective poodle.
Saturday morning, Matt did his best to put Friday night behind him. He'd never seen a dog smirk, but damned if the poodle hadn't been doing just that as he'd left Kate's room. During a mind-clearing wake-up run, he decided on a plan to win Stella over and clear the way for him to Kate's heart. Plus, he was far better off than Harley and Junior, who'd shown up for breakfast visibly and brutally hungover. Junior had turned gray at the sight of Kate's wheatgrass and mango smoothie,